Are you blessed or are you cursed with a strong imagination and a spiritual thirst? Do you wanna confide about the darkness inside? Come and talk about it on Self-Worst.
Okay, I just hit you with another episode of Self-Worst. Got you. Got your ass. I meant to put this episode out yesterday, but I got really tired. I was out in the rain all day, and then I got a COVID shot, which PSA, there's another COVID shot available. They're not really publicizing it. You can get one if you didn't got one like 6 months ago even. I know we're all kind of just pretending that that doesn't exist anymore, and I kind of am too. I get it. Like, if you're still going out and wearing a mask in public, I get it. If you're not, I also get it. But, you know, there are still vaccine updates and things like that that are happening if you care to. I don't know. It's really hard to give a shit, isn't it? I went and voted. I tried to vote anyway. As a Working Families Party member, I am exempt from this primary election, so I was not able to leave it blank. Although I think my absence from the Democratic Party is, in essence, leaving it blank for Joe Biden, encouraging him to maybe pull his head out of his ass and stop fucking bombing people. I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not a Democrat. You Democrat listeners out there, he's your problem. You fix it. He's your shitty candidate. Your fucking shitty party. I'm not in it anymore. It's just been a week. Finally, some kind of semblance of sunlight today. Starting to feel a little more recharged. And life goes on, man. What are you going to do? We got Billy Bullock on the show. They're a comedian, actor, event producer. Originally from Chicago. We talk about that. We talk about Chicago a little bit. It's a hell of a town. And you might have seen them on the Netflix show Easy. Speaking of shows, just up front, just letting you know, I still have not watched Station 11. We start talking about Station 11 at some point, and I still haven't watched it. It's only been like a week. I just told you all the shit I've been doing. I've been working in the rain. I've been participating in civic society. I've been getting immunized. I've been doing a lot. So I haven't had time to turn that on yet, but I'll get around to it. Whatever. Oh, also, up front, I forgot to mention this last week. I was on another episode of Radio Free Tote Bag. Our friends over there at RFTB Pod. So go check that out. It's, I think, as of now, the most current episode, although they're going to have one out. So it's, you'll find it. You're not an idiot. You're not going to, like, go to the RFTB feed and be like, I can't find it. It's not the most recent app. Like, you can find it. I believe in you. You're smart. You're listening to this show. You can figure that shit out. Don't worry about it. All right. That's all I got. And in like a weird in-between state right now where I'm wearing a hoodie, but it's too warm. But if I take it off, it's going to be too cold. We're living like that. It's one of those liminal days. You put on sunglasses and you're like, a little too dim now. Take them off. Oh, I'm squinting. What's that about? What's the deal with the sun? Have you had enough of me yet? Yeah, let's go to the interview, right? So you're from Chicago.
That's right. Yeah, I'm originally from Chicago, from the South Side.
Nice. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I moved here about 3 years ago, almost exactly 3 years ago now, because moved here in April. So yeah, it's coming up on 3 years, 2021, right after getting vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. What made you want to make the jump?
Well, you know, I feel like I got, after a while of being a performer, I got to like a glass ceiling. Like, I feel like I said this many times, like I'm from Chicago. I love Chicago and I'll sing its praises all the time. But like the one thing that's like, as a performer, like as a creative person, I did a lot of stuff. I'd gotten to the point where I'd done some things I never expected to be able to do in Chicago. And then I hit like a ceiling where I was like, okay, I have an agent. I have all these people who, you know, are trying to get me on to, let's say, commercials and radio, like our audio, you know, voiceover stuff. But yeah, that was kind of it, right? Like that was like the top that you could get. You're not getting, like, you could talk to somebody from, you know, an A&R for like a TV station or something like that, or you know, a channel like ABC, and they'll be like, oh yeah, you know, you live in Chicago. Okay, let me know when you're in New York.
Yeah.
Or, you know, let me know when you live in LA, because we're not going to fly you out. So
that is the thing with the fucking entertainment business, is that it really is still so confined to the two cities, you know, just right, New York and LA. And I wish that there were more sort of citywide hubs where like scenes were happening more. Like, I mean, there are, but it seems like it always ends up being this ladder where you have to like go from a cool city like Atlanta, yes, Detroit, Philly, yeah, whatever, and then you have to step up into the bigger city. Right. Where like I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe this is just me like looking back on like a part thing I was never a part of. But it seems like back in the day, you know, pre-90s, '70s, '80s, like you could have a scene in a city, you know, like Chicago had like Second City. I mean, they all ended up coming to New York, but like it still felt like you could have scenes that were a little bit more spread out. And
you still can. And I mean, look, in Chicago, there's definitely still a hugely thriving, especially stand up. Like the comedy scene in Chicago is still very much alive. And it's big. There's a lot going on. But, you know, you can't really make a living off of just doing comedy, live comedy, you know, like I would say maybe in the 70s and 80s, if you wanted to work in the clubs all the time, you probably could make a decent living, you know, like a modest, like kind of as an artist kind of living. But I think that's really gone away. Nobody gets rich from doing stand-up. You could be the best stand-up in the world. The most famous one still has to do like Jumanji movies. You know what I mean? Like you still have to end up doing acting of some kind, or some other form of like the entertainment world that pays more directly.
Is that what you're trying to do? Like live off of stand-up?
No, the opposite. That's what I'm saying. Like, I love stand-up. It was the first thing I ever did.
Yeah.
Not the first thing I ever did, but I mean, like, as an adult, it was the first time I felt like, okay, this is, like, my creative output, like, my artistic, like, the thing I actually really care about as an artist, not just, like, haha, we're doing yuck-yucks about dating life, right? Like, I actually, like, got so into it over time, and it became, like, my first love. But, no, like I said, I got to a point where, like, I was approached by someone who ended up becoming my agent, or I was on her roster at her company, and I was, you know, mostly auditioning for commercials and voiceover stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was like a whole new thing for me once I started doing that. Like I thought about it before, but like, you know, like a video game or an ongoing like narrative, like a cartoon or something like that, where you're one of the character voices, is like a thing that I would love to do. And love to be, I mean, I have done it, but I mean, like, I would love to be a part of that world more often. And like I said, like being a live performer, doing stand up and stuff like that, I could do stand up comedy every single day and probably make about 8 drink tickets.
Yeah, right.
You know, like that's about how much you'd get paid for most, even the great shows. I'm not even saying like this is all bad shows. Most of them try to like get you some kind of money, but you're not just, people aren't paying a lot up front to go to a comedy show, and they're certainly not tipping a lot afterwards. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I love stand-up. It's a thing I want to keep doing forever. And when I have a bigger platform, hopefully I can just do that, and the people just pay me directly, you know?
Talk about that. When did you first fall in love with stand-up, and what brought you to it? And
It was a lot of years ago now. I always like struggle. I go back and forth because some people say you shouldn't tell people you've been doing it a long time, because when they see you, they just think you're new because I just moved here, you know. They want some people have said that they think that you should just like don't tell anybody how long you've been doing it, but it's been almost 13 years. It's been 13 years now since I started. And I've done a lot of stuff that, like I said earlier, I've done a lot with that in that time. Like, it's brought me all the way, like, my collaborations and my friendships that I made in that scene, it brought me all the way up to being on television at least a couple times, and it so far, and at least the times that I've appeared, it's always been with, like, somebody that I started with. Like, the opportunity directly came from someone that I was in the stand-up scene with when we were like barely anybody, you know, broke, trying to get from open mic to open mic, you know what I mean? Like riding six people in a 4-person car kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a thing where, like, I was going to stand-up. I love comedy. I always have since I was a kid. And going to stand-up just to watch people and stuff was a thing that I did for a while. And then one day, a comedian who's way too famous now, was like, hey, if you come to my mic and I see you in the front row and you don't sign up next week, I'm going to roast you like the whole time that you're here. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, you're saying I have to sign up. And she was like, you have to sign up. So I did.
That's good. I mean, that's good that you had somebody to sort of push you into it because.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yes, to push me to, like, I credit that one person, but I also have, you know, like other friends, like a mutual friend of mine or a friend of mine who was also my roommate at the time was like sick of hearing my stories. Basically, she was like, if you tell me the same story about your ex-girlfriend one more time, I'm gonna kick you in the balls. Go do a stand-up, go do an open mic or join a band or something. Tell right. somebody who's not me, I live with you. So that was another thing where it was like, yeah, I've always, you know, I love comedy and I've always been a ham and a storyteller.
Right.
Like when I have an audience, I definitely like get up for it more, you know?
So you're an extrovert. You are a talker. You like the center of attention sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if I would say I like this to be the center of attention so much as it's just like, I like feeling like my thoughts are like, I like receiving the energy of like people understanding my thoughts and like validating. I like external validation, but I don't sure. like being necessarily the center of attention.
Sure.
Not always anyway. Like I definitely would like I like the moments where I can be, but I'm not looking for it in every opportunity in my life. And in fact, I hate how I'm not anonymous more often. You know, like sometimes I feel like I have eyes seeing me all the time, just like on the street, people just like looking at me and I'm like, don't look at me. I know that's not, and I don't mean that in an irrational or like self-centered way. I mean, like, I just want to be like walking down the street and not be noticed while, you right. know, not perceived.
Well, it's a mode you have to kind of switch into, like as right. a performer. Sometimes you're just like, you know, you got your sweatpants on, you're just going to buy eggs and you're not trying to like fucking engage with anybody. And then you see yeah. someone, you know, or something happens, you have to talk to somebody. There's a canvasser, there's some fucking thing.
Yeah, something like that.
And you're like, I don't want to talk to anybody right now, man, like this.
Or even something like people making content like on the street, like, you know, and seeing you and like, I don't know. There's something about me where like people who are like doing the like, little interview things with their
yeah you know, I'm so glad kind of, I've never got like man on the streeted by yeah, anybody because like I would get so uncomfortable immediately. It's like I'm not ready for this to be on permanent record. Like I'm not able to just like switch into like something, you know, cool and be able to know what to say like
right
first thing, you know. I don't know if you do you have this thing where you see yourself like a candid photo or like video of yourself, you're in the background of a shot or something and you're just like standing or talking or holding yourself, you know, like the way you carry yourself like normal and you're just like, I look like that.
Yeah. My posture. Yeah. Like sometimes yeah, I'm like, just... why am I so hunched over? Like I'm trying to hide, but that was just literally what I just said. Yeah. Like, yes, that definitely has happened to me where I'm like, oh, look at this, me in the background of this video.
Right.
And I do not look like I'm having a good time, even though I was amongst a bunch of friends and we were all singing. Yeah. I'm just like, they're all singing and the camera's panning across and then it gets to me and I'm just like And I don't even know why, because I was having a good time that night. Like, but yeah. In the video, I look like Depression City, like really bad. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I often have like resting pissed off face and it just doesn't look. Yeah. It just looks like I'm bummed out or something. I'm like, I'm fine. I'm just, you know, I'm not ready to be looked at right now. I don't want to be perceived.
Right. And to be clear, I'm fine is bummed out. That's they're like this. So that, like, you know, for me, like I definitely am like a naturally depressive person, but I mm-hmm. think I see that more as like just because I perceive too much of the world, right? Like more than I'm like I can't, like, you know, like I'm just sad and I can't be helped and there's no way to ever make me happy. It's just like, yeah, but the state of things still makes me depressed. Like
that's
state of
things.
And the way I feel about myself, you know, like makes me right. it's not like, oh yeah, just think of happy things. Like that's just not how it works.
This has been sort of a bailiwick on this podcast lately, that mental health and therapy and improving yourself, that's all well and good, but also there's really only so much like mindfulness you can do to uh-huh. escape the death spiral that the world is currently in and to like be okay with it. Like there is really only so much where like you are just confronted daily with this onslaught of violence and cruelty and stupidity and you can just kind of have to like namaste it and is what it is it, like you can you can really only take that so far.
And like, not to this is such a stupid thing to say, but I was about to say not to toot my own horn on this, and I'm about to be a hipster about it, but I was like, I've always been like a person who thought about like the apocalypse. I was like, always like a person who's like,
oh yeah,
like, the weirdest part is like during the pandemic, the first part of the lockdown, I really started to feel like validated because of the way that other people were acting about it. You know, once it became clear that this is not 3 weeks, this is not half a year, this is going to be for the foreseeable future, and people started like really changing the way they thought and talked about things, and I started to feel like, yeah, now you get it. I mean, I hate that I feel like I was right now, but I do feel like you at least get where my head was at those times. And yeah, but not just now. Like, you're right about everything that's happening now and how it seems to be like being accelerated and poured, gasoline's being poured on it actively from all fucking corners, like we're just barreling towards something horrible. But like, even when I was in therapy, like in my 20s, I did a lot of therapy. God, that's like a decade ago now. But even back then, my therapist once or twice said, like, I would ask him, like, how do I, you know, think about this stuff in a different way? He's like, the problem isn't that you're thinking about it wrong or that you're thinking about it like differently than other people would. It's that you think about it. It's that you're right, but you can't stop thinking about it once you know that you are right about it. Like, you, it's not that you are, there's something wrong with you. It's that you are so tied up in it that you can't let it go. And it was eye opening, but it was also like, oh no. Oh, I wish you had told me there was something broken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The only thing that I've arrived at is to just sort of accept the limits of your control. Over the world and do what you can and sort of tend your own garden, like right. that kind of thing. Like that is the only fucking way to stay sane that I've found so far, is be like, ain't shit I can do about it, man. I don't, like, it sucks. I and I care, but
and that's where we always eventually got to with it, right? Like that's actually what the case. I mean, what we got to in therapy when I was talking about it then too, and I still do have, like, I hear my doctor's words coming out of my head, you know, coming out of my mouth sometimes when I'm thinking about it. So it was immensely helpful. It got me through to actually be an adult that accepts myself a little bit, you know, nowadays. And, you know, whatever, I accept myself well enough, but you know what I mean, in my worst moments, I don't like being this person, you know what I mean? Like, I don't like having to be a person at all.
Yeah.
Like, it feels weird to like one day you're just here. You know what I mean? I've said this on stage before, but it comes from my actual thoughts. Like, one day you're just on Earth. And it's not like easy, it's hard. And what? That's not fair. Why did you do that?
You didn't ask for this shit.
I did not ask for it. I didn't plan for it.
Didn't sign up for it.
Doing it for the first time.
Yeah. It's rough. What were your first sort of apocalyptic visions? Seeing this as out, you've always had sort of a doomer streak.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it always like it's always just been about like how little things in my life kind of aggregate up to all of the ills in my life kind of thing. It wasn't like literal, you know, nuclear apocalypse most of the time. But there was a long time in my life before I was a performer, well, like they kind of overlapped, but where I was not, I had a 9-to-5 job. I was an IT professional and I kept like moving up in the corporate world. And that was really where I was at my worst mentally, is because like I would do, it was real like George Costanza, like real Seinfeld type shit, where I would like not fail upward, but like in spite of it being, I was obviously spiraling, they would give me more responsibility. And because I'm the kind of person where like I have to, if I have responsibility, I have to get it done and get it done as right as possible.
Right.
I would do the job well, even though I was obviously like visibly spiraling out of control from a mental health standpoint at work. Like, and yeah, like I would even, it would even show up in like reviews. It's like Billy does a great job, but he's obviously struggling with the idea of coming to work.
Right.
But obviously hates this. And so that it got to the point where that was where in my most, like my worst ideation would always be like, someone would be like, what do you want to do for lunch? And I would be like, I want to take this chair, throw it out the window and jump out after it. And they'd be like, so not Subway? And like, that, I mean, yeah. One time somebody said like,
to be fair, I would rather kill myself than eat Subway.
Yeah, these days. I mean, there was a time when, you know.
It's not that bad. I'm just, you know, I'm being
all kind of trash.
It's pretty bad though.
Yeah. It is everything's depressing.
The smell when you walk past a Subway of that, like they can't legally call it bread baking. It's
very specific.
It's a very specific odor that is not appetizing.
I feel you. I've cut out most fast food from my life these days, almost all of it, honestly.
So it was never like a specific apocalyptic doom, this or that thing is going to happen, so much as just sort of a feeling, like an overall feeling of dread and doom. And
yeah, and like focusing on, like I said, that how the negative things that have happened are aggregating, and then the positive things just seem to be few and far between. But but there's another thing that came up in therapy a lot, that like they're the same, right? Like they're not, I just view them differently. They're not like the good and bad things don't act different in my life, right? Neither of them aggregates from the other thing unless they're directly related to it. Like, yeah, you murder someone and then you go to jail, like that, obviously. But I mean, like, I would only see the bad things as connected to me, you know, and the good things is just like a temporary thing that I just got, and the other shoe is bound to drop soon.
Right.
And like, even when I was happy, it was like a dread of like, well, I'm very happy. Is my girlfriend going to get hit by a car in front of me? Like, what's going to happen? You know what I mean? Like, is my best friend going to decide that they act all of a sudden, hate my guts? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, I don't know. But then also, you know, I always have been a person who is politically minded and looks at the state of the world. Like, I read a lot of the news still because I'm a glutton for punishment, but like I read the news every day like a psychopath. Like I choose to do that, and I still am like that. But I don't know. It's I feel like, I guess it's like people who love like true crime and murder mystery stuff,
sure.
Because they kind of like, I've heard from people, because I'm not super into that, but it's fine. Like, but I've heard from people is like that. They love the idea of like being informed about like what people are capable of and like what could happen. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if I feel like if I know what could happen, I'm more prepared for any possibility kind of thing.
Yeah. There is sort of there's some sort of security blanket feeling that I have where, like, I'm not really on Twitter anymore, but I used to be really compulsive about it and would just sort of look, like, before I even knew what I was doing, phone was out of my pocket, I was on Twitter, and I would be scrolling through, or I would be, like, looking at the trending topics and being like,
right,
okay,
yeah, like, and forming an idea already.
Yeah,
like,
just like, okay, how close are we inching towards like a nuclear war or a civil war or some sort of like horrible cataclysm? Like, who's trending? Yeah. What's trending? Is there's like some border crisis? Is Putin trending? What's happening? Who's going to get us? And like the idea was that like I would know about it and then somehow be more prepared. Or something I couldn't walk myself through the logic of it. And I kept saying, like, Brad, why are you trying to be like on the foremost tip of finding out about how shit's going to hit the fan?
Mm-hmm.
When then what are you going to do? You can be like, oh no, the missiles are in the air. I guess I'll run home and die with my girlfriend or something. Like, what is it that you're trying to prepare for? And I couldn't ever come up with an answer, which is a big.
I don't even know either. Like, if there's nothing. It's not that I'm like I can't find it. There's nothing there. It's like not rational, right? Like, it's a very. I'm trying to have a rational response to an irrational impulse by being this informed. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what it's going to do. It's just the only way I can like interact with this part of like where my head is at in the real, like, you know what I mean? To like externalize it. Cause that's one thing that I know I need. And it's a big part of why I'm a performer is I need to like externalize this stuff. Like it's in my head. And if I keep internalizing it, I'll just spin it over and over again.
Yeah.
And it'll cause me anxiety and I'll polish that stone. I will get that stone polished. It'll be shiny as all get out, but I still won't know what it's made out of. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I need to get it out somehow, and I need it to be usually that means I have to interact with the world about that thought in some way. And I think that's part of it, is like wanting to be informed in that way so that I have thoughts about it and I can use the information that I'm getting to help me, get that thought out and like, or, figure out if I'm actually thinking the right thing or if I'm totally off base at the very least. Because that's where I'm usually at, where I try to over-explain myself because I just want people to tell me if I'm, like, completely off base with this thought, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it is so much scarier when it is just a some sort of creepy, demonic thought that is only living in your head and has that sort of Lovecraftian, formless horror that, like, I can't describe it to you. Because when you do, when Lovecraft actually does describe his monsters and stuff, it's just like, oh, Cthulhu's just a big squid guy, you know? And so it, like, it doesn't become as, it's not as scary as this unfathomable horror that you can't imagine and, you know, will drive you insane if you get too close to it or whatever.
Right.
You know, and a method or coping strategy that I've been on lately is I call it just embrace the gloom. I do this, especially in the winter. Don't just accept that it's cold and dark out and that the sun goes down at 4 p.m. I embrace it. I'm like, cool, great. Now it's time to like embrace just living in winter and it's cold out and I suit up when I go outside and I listen to death metal and I get weird, like, just go for the darkest part. Like, I've
lived the whole lifestyle.
Yeah, live the whole thing and just sort of let it kind of engulf me, just sink into the blackness. Because when you're in there, then you kind of realize that, I've been here before. There's nothing here. It's fine.
Yeah,
I've been
and it's before. The same as it ever was, right?
It's never scary. And, you know, like, it's just not that bad, you know?
Yeah.
And it feels sort of better to just, instead of trying to run from it, escape it or whatever, just turn around and just be like, okay, fine, hit me.
Yeah.
And it's not that bad.
Yeah, you're right. And right. That's cool. I mean, that's a cool way to think about it. I think that I have a tendency to, like, yeah, when I get to that place of like, okay, here comes the darkness, my first instinct is to, like, try and become the mattress so I don't have to face it. You know what I mean? Like, not just lay in bed, but try to become the bed, like try to like stay. But that obviously never works, and it doesn't, it's not productive. And so, like, eventually I get to the point where I have to be like, you, like, yeah, just get into it, go out, and despite how you feel, force it, because you want to feel differently than how you feel right now. And so trying to stay in it, you're trying to change it by staying in it is not gonna help it.
Yeah,
right.
So, I mean, like you were talking about with, like, why people get into true crime, because they like to sort of fully go into, and like why you read the news, you know, that's sort of a part of the philosophy for you know, embracing the gloom as well, is I will just fully play through the tape of the doom and chaos that I am afraid will happen, and just play the tape out, you know, like just let it go watch a nuclear war movie, go watch Threads, or go watch The Day After, or whatever, you know, watch some apocalypse movies, and just really, you know, just sit with it and just be like, okay, cool. And then, like, I've done that before. Like, I marathoned a bunch of them and I felt better. I don't know why, but I did.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like I can't do the exact on the nose thing when I'm like, you know, if I'm watching something that's too close to my life, I almost have to be like, nah. That's not what I'm doing. That's not why I'm watching this. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get away from that particular thing. And sometimes, not always.
Sometimes it is sometimes too real. Sometimes, like, there are some times when I want the opposite of that.
Yeah.
What was that fucking show? It was I can't think of the name. It was shot in Chicago. It starts there. There's like a plague in the first season.
Oh, and then world ends.
And then they're,
I cannot,
like,
believe you're bringing this up right now. This is so perfect. That show is called Station 11.
Station 11.
I was going to bring it up because, yes, it was shot in Chicago. It's based on a book, a novel that it starts in Canada. So but it goes around the Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. And, like, so they basically just started it in Chicago instead, because Chicago's a cooler place to shoot at, I guess, than Toronto or wherever it was. I don't know. But that book and that movie, or that show, is so cool to me. I will scream about it, independent of the Chicago connection at all, because you're exactly where I think where you're going with this. Correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, that book is a completely different vision on what a post-apocalyptic story is like, because it's like, yeah, there's the doom part of it, but they don't, like, wallow in it. They kind of, like, push past that pretty fast. And then the book is basically, like, focused on, like, people trying to build a relation, not even rebuild the world, because that's not what the book is focused on either, but it's like how you rebuild connections to other people when the world has ended.
Right.
Like, not like everybody's constantly afraid of the next person murdering them or zombies killing them around every corner. It's like, how do we find humans again? How do we make culture again now that, like, a lot of people are gone?
Yeah.
Most of us are gone. And that's, you know, not to spoil it, because I don't think that really spoils anything. But have you watched the whole thing?
No, that's what I was going to say, was I started watching it and I think I got through the first episode and was just like, oh, people are getting sick. And this was like pretty close. This was like lockdown time. And I was like,
it came out during lockdown.
This is too real. I don't want this. And like, I told people that and they were like, no, it gets better later. And I was like,
It doesn't just get better later. Yeah. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
That what you're talking, because we were in, like, when the show came out, we were literally in a pandemic that was very similar to, extremely similar to how the book starts. And because I read the book beforehand, I knew that it was not going to, like, dwell in that and focus. Like, I don't really want to watch The Walking Dead and never really got super into it in the first place. But there are people who, you know, rave and love that show and love that world. This is not like that. You know what I mean? It's very much more focused on, when I say human stories, what I mean is like, not just like human versus zombies, because there's not zombies in this story, but like, it's more grounded. It's much, much more grounded in like, we're not saving the world. We're not traveling through this big hellscape for the purpose of like grandeur. It's much more grounded than that, and it's about the people, and it's about art. It's about art. Yeah. They literally, it's the whole thing is about art and creating art. And there's more, and I want to tell you everything. I loved the book, and here's the crazy part. Mm-hmm. I read the book in 2019, right? Wow. Before it was given to me by a person that I was seeing at the time.
Yeah,
I still think that I'm still like super closely connected to, even though we're not, you know, in the same state anymore. But that comes into play, is what I'll say. Like, the fact that that happened to me in real life, and then the pandemic happened in real life, and then that show came out about a pandemic, and that happens in the show.
Yeah.
Was big to me.
Felt weird. You know, like, that always feels weird when something is sort of predictive. Like, I just recently played through the first, the newer Spider-Man game on the PS4. And yeah, sure. There's a pandemic in New York. And I was like, did they do that on purpose? Like, because there were like stay home, like wear a mask signs, like on like the buildings. And I looked, no, game was made in 2018. It's just fucking weird. And like, was just a thing that I had to like go down some like internet, like Reddit rabbit holes and stuff. Just like, did Spider-Man predict the pandemic? Did they make COVID? Yeah. Like, it's just real weird. But
yeah, there's art predicting that kind of stuff all through, you know, my lifetime in the 90s, mm-hmm. especially. But it just like, yeah, it is wild how much this one came to pass in a very timely fashion. But yeah, I look, I would urge you, if you are like me and you're like, I don't want to get too close to, like, if I'm consuming media, I don't want it to get too close to my bad feelings mm-hmm. at the time of having them, because I'm trying to get away from it or whatever. Station 11, it did not do that to me. Right. It was the opposite. Once I started watching it, I was so gripped, and I knew the story, and I knew where it was generally going, but I was still like, the way they do it, it was so good. I want more people to know that show happened. I think because they came out during lockdown.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, like some people were kind of just like, derail. I don't want that.
Right, and I don't think it got a fair shake, because it was going the opposite. I really think anybody could watch that and be like, this is insane. This is so good. Because it's also really well made. Like, it's a really well shot show. It's really well made. And it's got great actors on it, too.
I'll have to give it another shot. Maybe that's what I'll do tonight after work.
And it's only 10 episodes. Mm-hmm. The book is like 10 or 11 chapters. It's not one-to-one, but it's short. It's one season, and you're done. It's great.
You really like this show.
I fucking love it. I cannot believe you brought it up. I cannot believe. I was about to bring mm-hmm. this show up for the exact reason that you did. So I would sincerely.
Wow.
Sorry to yell. I'm probably redlining your recording. But like, I was literally, I couldn't believe you were about to say, like, and you couldn't figure out the name. And I was about to say, are you about to say Station 11 right now?
Yeah, I just couldn't think, because I keep thinking Three Body Problem.
It's a weird name.
Because that's like the new like book adaptation that's out now, which mm-hmm. I haven't seen yet, but we'll see. So you mentioned you're like a pretty depressive person, like you err on the side of depression and depressiveness.
Yeah, that's my that is my general, like, I would say mental, like, my struggles with mental health generally mm-hmm. are about like anxiety and depression. Yeah, but I also can be very much like, even when I'm in my worst of moods, I'm very much like an extrovert and like a wanting to be a public facing person, not if not the center of attention, but at least out in the world, you know, where the attention is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I that is my struggle, is that like, even with that, even wanting to be that person, I like, imposter syndrome always comes into play of like, I want to be around these certain people, or I want to be amongst this kind of scene, but I'm not deserving enough, or I'm trying too hard, or people don't believe mm-hmm. that I'm good enough or whatever. And then that turns in on itself, right? Like, I did. Anxiety turns in on itself, and then it becomes depression.
Right.
Like, you know, my, yeah, when I have anxieties about like what other people perceive me as, and then I'm like, yeah, well, they perceive you as this because you are, because you're drunk. You know what I mean? Like you're not worth it. You're an imposter. You don't deserve to be here anyway. And then I'm avoiding going out. Right. Like, cause I'm worried that people are going to see, or like, I'm going to see somebody out who doesn't like me. Right. Or like,
yeah,
I'm gonna go to the party or the show and nobody's gonna talk to me and I'm gonna feel like a fool for going out, and then I don't go. And it's like, now I feel like a fool for not going.
Yeah.
You know? So
when was
it's that kind of thing.
When was the first time you remember feeling depressed? Like about how old, and like, did you have the language for it yet? Did you know what depression was? Did it occur to you that that's what it was, or did it come together later?
Young enough where I didn't know. Yeah, like you said, I didn't know the language for it really, but I could feel it. I could feel that it was like a persistent, like not feeling good even when I know you're supposed to. Like when nothing is wrong and things are going fine. I'm at home with my family, you know, like we, you know, everything's, I'm going to school. But I'm just like, it's just like there's a persistent like, yeah, but I'm not happy with any of this. I don't like how any of this is going.
Were you able to talk to anybody about it?
I mean, my parents would listen when I was younger, but they weren't, you know, black people from the South Side of Chicago. Mental health in the 90s, mental health for little black kids was not like at the forefront of how people talked, right? Like,
right.
There was some amount of like, well, you got to, you know, talk to God about it, but not really, not even that really. It was just kind of, it doesn't exist, or like, you know, you can just not be sad, right? Like, don't be sad, just right. Be happy.
That always works for
you
me.
You can do that.
I just told Brad, don't be sad.
Yeah. Like literally, what? Like you can just stop. Just be happy. There's nothing wrong. It's like, and no, the idea of therapy and stuff was not in the picture. And even after I started, you know, as an adult on my own, you know, I had my own insurance and everything like that. So it wasn't like there was any reason for my parents to be like against it. They still were kind of like, well, you're not crazy. You're not right. Like, you're not like a crazy person. I'm like, yeah, but I am. But mom, I am. That's why I'm doing
and
it.
And also it's probably kind of a little your fault. Too, because it always has a little bit something to do with you. And just saying, I mean, you know,
both my parents have their own kind of things going on that, you know, I'm sure they don't want me to get into here on a podcast that goes out to public. But like it wasn't a thing that got addressed when they were coming up.
And it's, then I mean, it's hard. Suddenly, it's hard for everybody. Yeah. Like, I mean, your parents can ace it, can be like perfect, mm-hmm. good parents, and they're still going to like make some mistakes and fuck you up because they're people too. Like,
right.
What can you do? It's like, human condition.
And they try the hardest that they can to be good parents to us, but still fuck up toward each other. And I see that. Mm-hmm. And then they wonder why I don't want to have kids.
So you don't want to have kids. Like, this was going to be another question.
Yeah, no, it's not. I don't think it's for me. Mm-hmm. I and I've been thinking that since I was about 15 or 16 years old. And my parents used to be like, this is just a phase. You're a teenager. Of course you don't want to have kids. And yeah. I'm like, no. I don't think you guys understand that I'm watching you do it. Like, I'm watching you. And it doesn't seem like, it's not like they hated me or like my parents both worked full time jobs to keep us living in a nice home, you know, but they struggled. It wasn't like easy. We weren't rich. We were barely middle class at times, right? And I think that those struggles clearly weigh on you. And I'm not making fun of them or anything, but I don't want to live that kind of life. Like, I don't want to make that kind of sacrifice that they did.
Yeah.
And they made that sacrifice willingly, but I willingly don't want to, is what I'm trying to say. Like, I'm trying to say that I'm not interested. And my mom would be like, well, what if you meet the right person and that person wants to have kids with you? And I'm like, Ma, if they're the right person, they won't want to. Mm-hmm. If they ask me, if we can't be in a relationship without that, then they're not the right person, right? Yeah. Like, for me.
Yeah.
And That has not changed in like over 20 years. That has not changed.
I kept waiting for that feeling to come in where, you know, like I describe it as like the end of Jurassic Park feeling when they're on the helicopter and Sam Neill's got like little kids on his lap and he's like, oh, maybe kids aren't so bad. Like maybe I do want to be a papa. Like I kept waiting for it and I was, nah, I just don't feel it. Like it just never was a thing that I wanted. Period. Yeah. And was never like a thing, thankfully, was never like a thing that anybody in my family pressured me to do or felt like I needed to do to please them or something. They were like, kind of like, yeah, you do you, man. Like we had you because we wanted to. But if you don't, then that's your life.
That's a little better than my family was. They didn't really like, they didn't pressure me, but they did for a long time. They like kept asking questions persistently about like, why? I'm like, it's the same reason as all, it's the same reason as ever. And now I've turned it into a joke where like, when I see my family in person, cause they, you know, like I have a sister who is less than a year younger than me because my parents like to fuck, apparently. And so we're Irish twins and, she has a kid now and her kid is like, she has two kids actually. And her older daughter is like 11. And I see her and her kid together. And I always find a reason or like, even like my younger cousins or my nieces and stuff like that. They'll do something crazy or do something like that a kid does or fall over or break something or anything really, or just scream in a public place when they shouldn't be inappropriately. Mm-hmm. And I'll look over to their parent, my sister or my cousins or whatever. And I'll just be like, reason number 782. Like you've asked me my whole life for what reasons I don't want to have kids. This exhibit 12, like, you know what I mean? Like
meltdown in the grocery store or whatever.
Yeah, it, literally the meltdown in the grocery store. I always point to that as like, I would take that kid, put him up on the highest shelf and walk away.
Yeah.
Somebody sail on this kid. You know what I mean? Like clearance. Right.
I just learned this like last couple of days what a diaper blowout is. And I don't think I need to describe it to you for you to know what it means.
No, I do know what that is.
I think it's a pretty descriptive phrase. I think you can, the mind's eye conjures up a picture and was thinking about that and was just like, oh my God, thank God I got a vasectomy. Like it was just the best thing. It was one of the best adult decisions I've ever made. Like every time I see that, or like, you know, you live in New York and you see like a tired parent leading their screaming toddler down the street. And like every time I just want to like send the doctor who gave me my vasectomy, like to like 10 bucks on Venmo. Just like, hey, bro. I mean, I know you're well paid as a urologist, but
I saw another reason why we were right to do this,
but still thank you. You know, go buy something nice.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I also feel like I was like, going back to the fact that my parents both, you know, worked full-time jobs, I feel like I was parentified at a very young age in that I had to make sure that me and my younger siblings got home from school all together, made sure that you know, like there was at least, you know, I would make like macaroni and cheese and stuff like that before one of my parents would get home and make a real dinner. But like that, you know, that kind of like, I was basically a babysitter when they couldn't afford to have a babysitter, but needed to have one at like all every day of the week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it would happen, you know, my cousins would be there too. And we were around the same age. So they would be around and I was the oldest in that little cohort of kids. So I had to be the one in charge. And I think that changed my perspective on that very early, very soon. And I think that's what makes me not want to do it now, is because like I did that already. I raised these kids right with you. I was, you know what I mean. But I think my parents did the best job that they possibly could with the tools that they were given, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm a functioning member of society because my parents wanted me to be, and they made sure that I knew that you know what kind of trouble I would be in if I didn't do X, Y, or Z, all through my life, right? Like they gave me a sense of being responsible to those around you and taking care of what needs to be taken care of and not cutting corners. That has made me a hyper vigilant, super anxious person in my adult life, but it it also made me
right, but it also of, seems know, to make you
it makes me who I am.
It makes you a good worker, also.
Yeah, it makes me
you
driven.
You keep getting
yeah.
promotions at work, and like you're doing fine. You're gainfully employed.
Promotions I don't want. No, I quit that. I quit that life in 2016, pretty dramatically.
Did you throw the chair out the window and jump after it?
No, but we were talking about Twitter. I was working for the school district in Chicago, and there was a lot of layoffs at that time because of budgetary concerns. And like, I was watching it happen, but my job was relatively safe because I was in IT and there are not a lot of people who could do my job at the time. And I basically was just like on Twitter talking about what I thought about that. And it wasn't nothing positive. You know what I mean? I wasn't saying positive things about the school district and the city's government at that time. Yeah. And I think it got to a level where somebody...
That was when things were getting pretty heated, like with the teachers union and stuff too,
yes.
right?
The Chicago
teachers union's pretty rad, pretty strong, but...
Yes. And the governor at that time was just like holding the state's budget hostage to get basically Republican stuff that nobody else wanted.
Right.
And so, you know, there was a lot of layoffs and there was a lot of negative things happening and there was a lot of stuff happening that we didn't know about inside the building until we read it in the news. And so like, or, you know, saw it on TV. And so I was just basically saying like, this is what's happening inside that I'm looking at. And right. I think it eventually got to someone in the mayor's office, and the mayor in Chicago has a lot of power over the school district. And I got fired in a very dramatic fashion, like Fight Club style, where they took me into an office. Not, I didn't break anything, but right. like they took me into an office I had never been before with an HR professional I'd never met before. And my boss's boss slid me a manila envelope. And it was like, I pulled it open and the first thing I saw was my own face because it's my tweets. And so it was like my little avatar in the corner. And I didn't even look at it. I was like, oh, I know what this is. And I popped it back in there, slid it back across the table. And he's like, what, you don't want to read it? I was like, I know what it says. I wrote it. And he goes, so you admit that you wrote it. You're not going to try and say that you were hacked. And I was like, no, dude, it was the truth. This is all real. I didn't say anything. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I didn't say anything that was like slander. I just talked about how I'm sitting at my desk and I'm watching a woman who's been working here for 20 years, happily working for the school district, crying as she's packing up her desk, and her whole team, who, by the way, won't have a boss anymore and probably are going to get laid off in the next coming days too, are like wishing her well. And the happy birthday balloons are still floating over her desk because right. it was her birthday the day before.
Jesus.
Yeah. And that's what I wrote.
Yeah.
And like, it was stuff like that. And like, there were other things that I put in there that I'm not going to get all into, but like,
sure.
like that, it was just like watching people get, and that's very, if you work in any kind of like tech or media landscape nowadays, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. Cause that's what's happening today, is like, everybody's getting laid off in those sectors. People who've been doing those jobs for years and have yeah. lots of knowledge and stuff.
I picked the best time to do a coding boot camp. Like,
see, yeah, exactly. Year. It's like it's crazy. I mean, how could you know? I mean, the hubris of the corporate machine that like brought us to this point is like insane. Because yeah, everybody thought that it was just going to be up and up and up, and everybody's going to keep hiring forever and mm-hmm. getting free money. And now now all the people who got hired are the ones who have to pay the price.
Well, the thing is, you know, like the way I look at it is if capitalism is the great end-all be-all economic system that everybody says it is, then eventually the job market will correct itself and everybody will start making money again and inflation will go down and everything will be fine. So
ideally,
I don't got anything to worry about, right? Because it's all yeah. good. So I'll yeah. be fine. I'm going to have a six-figure job in no time. No big deal. Just
one day
wait.
You'll be, a, one day you'll be an orange forces. Millionaire.
The market forces.
The market forces.
The invisible hand. You just gotta wait for it.
One yeah. day I will too will be rich enough to act like a white person who can abuse everybody and get away with it. You know what I mean?
You know, we're all temporarily embarrassed millionaires. I think
that's right. One day I will be a millionaire.
Quote. Yeah, it's.
I'm never buying a house unless I become a sudden millionaire. Like I don't think that's ever gonna happen for me like that. Mm. I can't believe that people think that they're gonna like bootstrap their way to actually being like these like psychos out, at the 1%. Like you're never gonna do that. They're yeah. stealing from you too. You're
That's
also
the
a slave.
Is that like I think the only shot you have is maybe trying to like fully lean into that like hungry hustle and grind entrepreneur life. And I've never identified with that. Like I have never, like I have always just thought that those are the lamest fucking people. The, you know, like the like Elon Musk dick riders on Twitter. Like,
right.
I just thought those people were contemptible from like the youngest age. Right. Like before Twitter, before Elon Musk, before any of that, I just like could not stand those people. Right. And so
it's not,
like,
yeah, it's not even it's and look, before I say this, it is the Elon Musks of the world for the record.
Yeah.
But it's not even the Elon Musks of the world that really bother me. It's the people, like you said, the dick riders, the people who think that they can literally like climb the ladder to success, to be like them, to aspire to that,
mm-hmm.
and be so wrong on top of it, and to be just fully not. It's not possible without major exploitation of huge numbers of people, and you are amongst the exploited fool. You're not gonna do it.
Well, that's like the other, like, I mean, I wanted to get into tech stuff because I, you know, see it as a, like, it's one of the last bastions of industries where you can make mm-hmm. a decent middle class living, which like a middle class living these days is six figs. It just is.
And you can kind of go anywhere. You can kind of
go anywhere. There's some freedom to it. Like, anybody who I talked to who was working in tech would just sort of have this, you know, just this sense of ease about them that I was always very jealous of. I was like, you don't feel this like just constant precarity and this just this low simmering anxiety that everything's going to go bad and that you're not going to have any money and everything's, you know, and I don't know. But like the other thing with the tech sector is that so much of it is run by, you know, these like Elon Musk dick riders, like that, like,
yes.
So there is no sense of worker solidarity. There is no sense of like, hey, we gotta like stand up to our greedy bosses and make sure that like we're treated right as employees. It's all just like, no, just please boss. I'll lick your boots. I'll eat whatever plate of shit you can give me just because like, this is how I win. This is how I hustle. Right. And like,
they are aspiring greedy bosses. Yeah, so they're not, there's no other way to look at it is that they want to become that. And so why would they ever be? Yeah. Why would they ever be in solidarity with you? They want to get to the point where they are far enough away from you to exploit you openly and not have any consequences for it.
Yeah. So
that's one of the things I hated about working in corporate life is that like I could feel that and they kind of want you to, they kind of want you to become a different person and talk in the way that like, that's not a thing that bothers you. Mm-hmm. Right. Like they want, you know, the like whole, like circle back on what you were saying before about the, you know, like the CP reports are not coming up in time, like all that kind of like you have to be this fake version of yourself to fit into this obvious exploitation.
Yeah.
And like act like it's fine, right, and act like you like it. Actually,
it is a performance in and of itself. So I think, you know, like to put on one performer hat during the day and another performer hat in the evening is that's too many Batman cowls. That's too many little like masks, secret identities.
Yeah, I think it's like, yeah, I got to the point where it's like, I don't want to be this person anymore. If you want me, I'm good enough in my job that if you want me to be me and do my job and not like scold me for not doing corporate speak in the meeting, then fine. But like, I'm still good at the job, so you can't do anything about it. But I would rather be me. And I got to a point where it's like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do the 9-to-5 like corporate life. Like I could work 9-to-5, but I could never do like this corporate fakery anymore, like, you know, the button down. And then as soon as I did that, the world ended and everything I thought was right. Now everybody works from home, which I wanted to do since like 2013, and I would always get told no, even though I could do my job from the space station as long as it has Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Like and now everybody does that. So it's like another one of those things was like, see, I was right that whole time. And y'all made me want to kill myself for a year.
So what do you do now? Do you still have a day job?
No, I have a couple. I mean, I choose to not have a day job mostly because I want to keep that time open for auditioning and stuff like that. But I have multiple night jobs. I work, you know, I work in bars and stuff, but I also like host events and I work for a company that does karaoke. It's not like extremely corporatized or anything. It's more just like a small team of people that does stuff around Brooklyn and Queens and the city and stuff like that. And honestly, it's like working a bar job, but it's much easier and it pays the bills. And I'm on a microphone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I get to get on and go to different places around my neighborhood and around my borough. And my job is to like try and make people have fun at a party, and I get paid for that, you know. And I get paid more than I would get if I was bartending at that same bar. So, or not more, but like the base pay is like just as good, and I don't have to like break my back every day. So I honestly feel pretty good about where I've gotten to in terms of stability on a month to month basis and paying. You know what I mean? Like you're talking about how, oh no, I'm an artist, and 1 month I had a bunch of gigs, and the next month I had zero, and so now I'm broke.
Mm-hmm.
That instability, I feel like I've kind of ridden that first part of that out and gotten to a much more stable place from that baseline with those kind of coupled gigs that I do. But then I also want to keep making more stuff. That's why I want to keep that baseline stability, so that I can go out on a limb and put together a variety show at a venue that I've never worked with before, and bring some weirdo freaks that like from the Coney Island sideshow to a stand-up show, and bring drag performers to, you know, with a rock band and like that kind of stuff. I want to do those kind of like weirdo nightlife art scene kind of things, mm-hmm. too. But again, most of that time when I do shows like that, you know, you might break even, you might make a little bit of money after paying your artists, and I do want to pay my artists. So, you know, you got to have something that makes sure rent is paid before you do all that kind of stuff, or after. But no, I don't really have a day job per se, besides trying to get back into the more regularly working in voiceover stuff.
Yeah, it's stand-up is such a fascinating art form to me, because it's half, you know, people who want to do the latter. They want to work their way up and be on SNL. They want to work their way up and get like some corporate gig and get, you know, be a headliner and tour and have a bus and like all of that shit, or they want to like get sucked up into the gears of the Marvel universe or whatever it is that they can like grab onto, which like honestly no judgment, like if that's a way in, that's a way in. But then the other half is still like such a like weirdo, like bohemian troubadour kind of, you know, just these weird freaks, these artsy freaks who probably drink too much and hang out at night, and they're all just like this, you know, it's like a pirate ship of just these like outcasts and, you know, like Tom Waits characters and just, you know, just interesting, strange people. And it's,
you should watch Station 11.
I guess I have to watch fucking Station 11.
Yeah. Yes. And I seriously feel like I fall more naturally as a performer into the latter group, right? Mm-hmm. Like I've done road gigs. I've done stuff in many different cities besides New York and Chicago and LA. And I could do all that stuff. And I would love to, like, I auditioned for SNL last year. Obviously I didn't get it. But that was like, that's where I've gotten to. Like, I have a manager, and I'm at the point where like, yeah, I'm auditioning for that stuff, and I would love to even do just like one season on SNL, because I have a friend who did one season on SNL, and he still can like just go and do comedy shows and tour and mm-hmm. do stuff when he wants to, and he's still, you know, trying to get other stuff, trying to be on back on television and all that stuff. But that one season was enough to kind of like sustain his name, or, you know, get him to a name recognition that could sustain him, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, some of the funniest people only do one season of SNL. I mean, Tim Robinson was a writer for one season. I don't think they used any of his sketches, and he went on to like write the best sketch comedy show of like our generation. It's crazy.
Yeah, so. and I think that that kind of stuff is, it's not the direct goal, but like, yeah, I'm always looking for those opportunities. I'm always trying to get to that place, because again, it, once you get that platform and you get that name recognition, you can kind of go back. You can do your stuff too. You can still do your things that are maybe more philosophical and more personal or more like weirdo and not as broad facing as something like an SNL has to be, right? Like SNL has to be pleasing to a lot of different folks, and if you're on that show, the kind of work you're doing is different than maybe the kind of work you would do on your own. But you have the ability. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that would be great to have, you know.
We just hit about an hour. I just want to do like a little time check. Do you do you need to get going? Do you have a hard out? Do you want to? I mean, I'm okay to keep talking a little longer.
I don't have a hard out. I'm technically on call for my team tonight because I'm off for karaoke. But if something goes wrong, that's not going to. And they don't really even start till like 10. So I'm good for the moment.
So right on. Okay. So you mentioned, you know, you don't want to have kids. I wanted to get in a little bit more to like, you know, how's sex and dating for you? How's all of that stuff going?
It's hard to, cause I'm really thinking about it more like before the pandemic and before I moved here and now, like I was like, sorry to any of my family if they hear this. I was a major slut like in the last few years.
Before. Right on. Hell yeah.
Like when things were going well for me in my career and people knew who I was in my city that I'm from, I have a lot of friends and a lot of them are, you know, like nightlife folks and burlesque performers and weird kinksters. And it was easy to get into the dating and sex life stuff there. I think you may have heard that it's notoriously hard to start dating in New York because everybody's kind of in that same boat of like, oh no, I'm surrounded by people but I'm lonely kind of vibe. With that said, I think it's been okay. I think I've been all right. I haven't really been prioritizing getting into a relationship or anything like that since I've been here. It'd be nice. It'd be fine if something like happened and I found someone irresistible and we can't like not get into something serious. That'd be great. But it's not really where I'm at because a lot of the time I feel like the things that I want to do with my career and like the way that I want to like live my life aren't always conducive to being in a relationship with someone who doesn't also do that.
Yeah.
But then all the, you know, you get into a scene and everybody's like, why would you date another performer? Why would you date a comic? Why would you date?
Yeah, I mean,
A musician?
The cliche joke is, yeah, comics are fucking undateable and never date a comic. But like, I know a lot of comics who date each other and it's fine. They're married to each other. Like, I don't know. Like, I know it's a joke. You know, it's like it's a common refrain just because it's.
I think it's any scene, right? Like musicians say that about other musicians, or you know, like. And stuff like that. And the theater performers say the same kind of thing. But I think it's more like you're too close to it. It's like too incestuous or something. But at the same time, I'm of the mind of like, if this person shares not just your like interests, but also like your schedule, how that's more likely that you're going to get connected, right? Like they're going to be romantically interested in each other. With that said, I'm not dating any comics right now. I'm not interested at the moment in anybody in particular, or at least anybody that it has not been made clear which way we were going by one party or the other. And like, I don't know. There was a few months last year where I was thinking, well, let me get back on the apps. Let's see what the apps are giving now. There's some new ones. There's queer ones now. There's like all these like. Mistake. It was a mistake. I couldn't do it. I didn't even last very long. Like I had a very successful relationships that came from like OkCupid back in 2012 or something like that.
Right.
Back when it was like the only thing around. And that was great. I met some people off like Tinder when Tinder was first new that I ended up like being with for over like more than a year, right? I tried to go back to that shit now. Can't do it. Everybody is in a place where there is no possible way they could date me or I could date them.
Right.
Because I keep meeting these people. It's like, oh, this person is like very interesting, has a lot of like in their, you know, smart things to say in their profile. It makes references to stuff that I think is interesting. Has pictures that are intriguing to me because I want to know what they're doing in the pictures, right? So this person on paper, very interesting, very attractive. And then they're a teacher for kindergarten.
Right.
So that means they get up at 6 a.m. every day.
And right. Most days of the week, lifestyle-wise, that's just not going
to
jive.
Yeah. Most days of the week, I go to bed at 4 a.m. at the best, right? Like if I had a good night, it's probably later. And that just isn't going to work. And then there's also like the fact that it's like there's all these people that I meet that are just like, yeah, I'm even less interesting than that. Right. Like, I don't have any interesting things to say about myself. All I have to say about myself is that I moved to New York from Michigan.
Right.
I'm in a big city now, but I'm from a small town girl, you know. And it's like, hey, my biggest crush is a sword swallower who swings on chains. Like, right. I know that person in real life. I don't think this is going to work. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that it's going to be, I don't think that we're going to have a lot to talk about after a while.
Right.
If that's where you're at in your life, and there's nothing, you know, no shade. You're for somebody else. And I don't think that I'm for you, you know?
So far as, gender identity, you use they, them pronouns and, you know, talk me through, what brought you to identifying that way and what that experience has been like.
Yeah, man, I feel like that came to me, like that realization came to me like in my early 30s. I'm 38 now. Mm-hmm. I probably shouldn't say that because I want to be on TV. I look better than I look younger.
You look
than
great.
But like
I'm 39 and I fucking look it.
No, you don't. You look well, honestly, you look the same age as me.
Yeah.
To me, you look like we're the same age, and that makes sense then because we are. I think people expect us to look like ancient by the time you get past 35. You know what I mean?
Well, that's, another like cliched joke is like 35 in the city is 25 in the suburbs, you know, like
But then we age differently.
Our generation too, just ages completely differently. We are not our parents' generation where everybody looked like they were 60 when they were 30.
Yeah, I agree. But people say that, but then they don't live it in practice. They're always like, oh, when I turn 30, what am I going to, I'm going to be dead. Like you're not going to be, you know, but anyway,
in fact,
when
you'll
I was
be better,
that was my experience. And when I was about 32, I realized I like kind of looked back. I had this like epiphany where I looked back on all these times that I had questioned gender roles or questioned why, you know, the way that people treat boys and the way that people treat girls when they're young, like children, I mean, and like why we even do any of that, because it doesn't matter until you're grown. Right. Like it doesn't matter. And I remember thinking even as a kid, like, why does my dad talk to me so much about what boys and men should do? But then also I have to cook and clean and take care of the kids when he's at work and he's got like roofing and contracting job and he does like, you know, big manly things, but at the same time it's like none of this plays out in this hard and fast left or right kind of way that you say it does when you're talking in practice, right? Like in my life it's not actually like that. I remember from a very young age questioning like what does a man have to be like this for, or like why do you say this is what a man is to my dad. And him launching into like a very long kind of lecture about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But and even then being like, yeah, I don't believe in any of this.
I was going to ask how was that sort of met, those questions met by your parents, family, peers, whoever?
Same kind of way. Like there's no, I mean, even for me, like gender wasn't really a thing until I was an adult. Like, I mean, like the idea that there was, it would be a thing you could talk about in a nuanced way wasn't really like a thing for me until, like I said, in my 30s. And I, you know, you were either a queer person, you could be gay or bisexual or lesbian or whatever, or if you're trans, like, who knows, right? Like, it could be, this is what I had at the time.
Yeah.
And I got to a point where, like, you know, as I get older, I meet a lot more people of a lot of different persuasions and gender expansiveness, and like I got to a point where it's like, okay, I'm talking to these folks about where they're at in their lives and what that means for them and what it means for them to be trans in their specific life. And then these are, you know, a lot of these are performers and other type of creatives and stuff that I'm close to for other reasons. But then I got to a point where I was like, oh, I'm not just an ally, am I? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, there's a reason why I'm attracted to all these like super androgynous trans people, and being attracted to super androgynous like folks to date when I was like younger and in my 20s and stuff. Like, I'm attracted to that androgyny for a reason, it turns out.
Yeah.
And
are you more like attracted to androgyny in other people, or do you like to exhibit androgyny yourself?
What I'm saying is that's how I got to the point of realizing that it was not just that I was attracted to it in other people. Yeah, that I wanted to exhibit it in myself, in my personal, not just, it was started out as like personal style, but then it was like, no, like actually, like even at home, you know, yeah. Like behind, like I don't necessarily want to be perceived as male or female. Like I don't really feel like I'm gonna transition into like a trans woman, but that's why I'm not binary. I don't really feel like either of them is like exactly right. Like I kind of feel like in between, and at times I definitely could lean more one way or the other or whatever, and that doesn't always have anything to do with how I look outside, you know, how I, like when I say like the aesthetic performance,
right?
Or doesn't necessarily always match up with how I feel. That's true for everybody, but it's just more pronounced when you're doing something that's outside the norm, the binary.
Yeah. The expression part is a big part of it, because I guess that's just the first thing people see. But you know,
right.
And you can't go around telling people, like, I'm feeling more masculine today, but I'm presenting more feminine. Like that.
Yeah, and people don't really get it. And that's okay. Okay, like right. I sometimes will try and talk about it in my performance life, mm-hmm. and people don't necessarily understand. They're a little bit confused about that, because I'm also like still, you know, I'm largely mostly attracted to femme people,
yeah,
and like women and stuff like that. One time I was talking to a friend who was like, asked me if I was interested in being set up with anybody, and I was like, well, who is it? And he was like, oh, it's my cousin, he's a gay man. And I was like, oh, no, not him. It's no shade to him, but right. That's not it. And then maybe a couple months later, we were at the same show, and we were both performing, and I got off stage and he was about to get on, and I went past him and he said, I thought you said you weren't gay, because I was like, gays, where are you at? Are we here? On the stage, right? And that was just like a shorthand for any kind of like LGBT person, right? And I was like, no, dude, genderqueer. And this, he finally kind of got it.
Queerness on a different spectrum than sexuality.
Right.
Those are two different levers.
Right. And which is a thing, like in, when I was younger, that's what I mean to say. When it's like, I've always been like attracted to femme people. Like I've always been obsessed with women and, mm-hmm.
Preach.
especially lesbians. And see, what I mean by that, for the record, is not like the super male gazy kind of like, I want to get in between them. It's like, no, sometimes I see a lesbian couple walking down the street and I was like, yeah, like that. Like if I was one of those, usually one or the other, or sometimes both of them, I'm like, that could have been me. I could have been that.
Did you see Love Lies Bleeding yet?
No, not yet. I've heard things about it. I've heard people are getting themselves into trouble while watching
it. It's pretty, you know, I mean, that's the other, like, you know, when you are admiring people, there is that sort of Venn diagram of, do I want to be that? Do I want to fuck that? Or both, you know? And until you're in your 30s to kind of suss that out.
I have accidentally gotten into sexual relationships with a couple lesbians before, where they've been like, I've not done this with a masked person in a long time. I'm like, that's wild, because I was not expecting you to say that. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know this person was like mostly exclusively into lesbian people. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, we had a connection. And I'm like, oh, yeah, see, in another... the thing about lesbians is that when you're not one, you're probably not going to get with one. So if that's your, like, if you're mostly sexually attracted to lesbians and you're not a lesbian yourself, you're not a woman yourself, it's very hard to date them. But it has happened
once. Circuit there, you know.
Yeah, it's not like, I want to be in between those lesbians.
Yeah,
like
literally,
like I'm attracted to them probably, yeah, because I do want to be one. I want to be there. Event like in the Matrix, that would be the case, right? And and because of that, yeah, I probably if I was a lesbian.
Or
no, I'd pick Switch.
Ah, ooh.
From the first movie.
Switch
was supposed to be a different gender identity outside than inside.
That makes sense. Yeah, kind of an androgynous, like David Bowie vibe.
They didn't let him do it at the time. they didn't let him do it at the time. But yeah, 1999. See, if that had happened, I watched that movie in 1999 and it changed my life.
Oh, it changed everybody's, our whole generation. We went that was like the first R-rated movie that we got to go see, and we were in high school, and it blew our fucking minds.
And it turns out, trans allegory. Both people who made that movie eventually came out as trans.
Did you come out as trans, and how was that received among your peers and your friends, family, all that?
I'd say slowly over the last 5 years or so. Starting out slowly and then accelerating, basically. Like, it would be the thing where I was like, if I'm in a space with a lot of my friends who are queer performers, I'm more likely to like lean into it a little more. And if I meet somebody new in one of those spaces, I'll be like, oh, I'm Billy. I use they, them pronouns if you're cute. You know what I mean? And then it started, like that. And then, in more straight male dominated spaces, that didn't come up as much. But it just didn't come up as much anyway. If somebody asked me about it, I still probably would have said the same thing.
Right.
Over time, I think, put it on your Instagram, put it in your bio when you get a perform, when someone asks you for a bio for a performance. I started doing that more and more often. And then I think, maybe 3 years ago, I realized that it's like, yeah, I pretty exclusively feel like a trans person. Like, I don't really feel like I'm back and forth, like he, they, or like I sometimes feel like it, or I'm not. Like, I'm not just non-binary. I'm like, oh no, I'm fully from my whole life. This was a thing, and I could keep going. I could even go further back in my life to things that I could point to about sex and gender that I didn't even know were a thing until I thought about it way later, right? Until I thought about it in the last few years. But yeah, and I know that that's a real thing for me now. And so I got to the point a few years ago, like I said, where once I realized, yeah, this is a real thing. It's not going away now that I've opened that bottle. It's not getting corked again. And so, I was just much more direct about it to people in my life. I'm not like, I don't think anybody in my life I'm completely in the closet too anymore. But again, it's one of those things where it's complicated stuff like that. My family doesn't necessarily always address now that we're all grown and there's no parent to tell you no.
Right.
You know what I mean? So my siblings know that we've talked about it. My parents have to know because I'm not hiding it from them. And it's in stuff that they've consumed that I have made. And they just don't kind of like, they don't attend that part of my life, right?
Sure.
So they're not in present for it. And so I think they can kind of just like not like hate me or shun me, but also
I think that's a pretty good outcome for like people our parents' age, just like
I agree.
I'm just gonna not like I'm the cool part that I'm not, not gonna disown you.
I want you to be happy. The part of that I don't understand, I don't understand it. Right. Like, it's basically where they're at.
And old dogs, new tricks. It's a whole concept that in our lifetimes we have sort of seen it develop as, and the language for it has developed.
Yes. Yes. I think the generation after me is the first real generation that just had it naturally in their in their lexicon from a young age. That's what I mean when I say I didn't even have the language to explain how I felt about gender really until I was already grown. Right. And I only thought about it in the way that you would naturally think about it, which is why I brought up the lesbian thing, why I brought up always being attracted to women, is that that made me think I was straight.
Right.
Forever. It's just a straight cis het male. And I could live my life fairly there wasn't always any kind of problem. It didn't run up against my life very hard, right? To not think about it, to not consider that there's more going on with me than just straight cis male. Because I could date the people that I was attracted to for the most part, and not have to hide it or run away from it, but still have the reasons in my head be kind of different, right? And then I got to a point where it's this is actually just grating against me to not address the part that I know is part of me, mm-hmm. right? And that's when I realized, oh, yeah, it's not that I'm not queer because I like women. Actually, now that I realize I am queer, I can much more simply and without any kind of anxiety include more people in the definition of women.
Right.
There's more people that I consider attractive to me now, not less. Like they were before, but I can admit that without any kind of like, you know, like if you say to yourself, I'm a straight man, but every once in a while I look at a trans woman, I'm like, wow, that person is attractive. Does that make me question my sexuality? I don't have to worry about that at all. Like yeah. At this point in my life, I'm a trans person. So that's not like a, you know, like I'm not afraid of that, or I'm not afraid to describe why a trans man might not be my type
right.
for the same reason. Right. Right? And sometimes all of that flies out the window when I meet a specific person, you know? So like I said, if there's somebody that I meet where they're like we're irresistible to each other in that vibe. Right. It's good that it kind of, I've gotten to a point where that person could be a lot of different types of human.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, I won't have to spend a lot of time in consternation about whether this is good or bad for me if I'm just attracted to them and they're attracted to me, right?
Right.
If you're still considering yourself straight, you might go, should I even date this person because of that, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. So, it's just attraction. It's just, do I feel
in an ideal world, right? Yeah, and what is not attraction is also much more secure when you have that too.
Yeah, it's and again, like it's you know, like I'm pretty far over on the you know straight cis male side of things.
Sure,
but like still like as somebody who's like gotten into fitness, like there is a thing in like I don't know, just gym culture where like looking at other dudes' muscles is like fucking great, and like there, but it's not. Even slightly sexual, but I still do want to like look at a shirtless guy and just like really just take in the form, just really take in this, just like wow,
sure.
Look at those pecs, wow, look at those delts,
look at the work that person has put in.
Look at that, look how look how strong that person is, and not feel at all attracted to them, but like have a whole other, it's a whole other spectrum, it's a whole other vibe of admiration that I'm like. Hell yeah, you got that going on.
Yeah,
but
yeah, that's real. Yeah. I definitely feel that. I definitely feel that. Like, yeah, almost. It's almost like compersion, but you're not like in a relationship. So it's like you just like feel something good for that person,
mm-hmm.
and that makes you feel good internally.
Absolutely. But,
and it's it doesn't have to be like a level of like it doesn't have to go past that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we are we should probably wrap up soon. We're getting there. Let's do plugs.
I'm very chatty.
That's okay. That's okay. That's good. That's actually what a podcast is people talking. You've been a lovely guest. This has been super great. You brought
the thanks heat. For having me, Brad.
Yeah. So tell people where where we can find you.
You can find me on the internet at Hey Billy Bullock on Instagram. That's spelled BILLIEBULLOCK. It's my name, Billy Bullock. Real name, no gimmicks.
That's a cool name.
Thank you. People say that all the time. You know what I realized? New Yorkers.
It's like a superhero name. You know, it's like a Peter Parker kind of thing. It's got the alliteration. It's got the
right. And I think some people like make a name like that when they move to New York. And I'm like, oh, are we all scammers? Is that what's happening? But no, yeah, that's just my name. My dad's name too. Weirdly enough. Almost like he chose it that way. But yeah, you can find me on the internet there. It's pretty much the only internet I do, the only social media stuff I do these days. I probably should get a TikTok. My manager's going to yell at me for not having a TikTok. But I'm in Brooklyn. You can find me all over performing. I'm starting a new show in May. So look me up on the internet for that. It's going to be a live variety show. Here in Brooklyn, still working with the venue to lock down a specific date, but it'll be May, like late May, at probably a Dromedary coming out. So,
hell yeah! Let me know where the venue is. I want to come check.
When it's when the dates are locked down and all the performers are confirmed, I won't shut up about it. So follow me on Instagram if you want to see more of that kind of stuff.
Right on.
Mostly just selfies and posting about shows that I'm doing. So
what else are you gonna post? What? Flutics. Yeah. Like, that's what it's for.
No, that's not me. No. Yeah, that's not me.
That's what it's for. that's what you post there.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Thank you once again to Billy Bullock for being on the show. That was a fun talk. We hit it, man. We got into it, and this was, again, I'm amazed with how many times somebody comes on and it's the very first time I've ever fucking talked to them. And we just talk, and they just open up, and they be talking about all kinds of stuff that, I don't know, isn't easy. So shouts out. Thank you so much. Go check out their work and go do a karaoke night. I encourage you. That's your homework this week. Last week, I had a whole thing. We had to resolve a conflict. You had to really do some deep work. This week, your homework is all you got to do is go have one too many and sing an embarrassing song. That's it. That's all you got to do this week. Pretty low stakes. And you got to follow the show at SelfWorst on Instagram. And follow me, Radical Pearson, Instagram and Twitter. You know, there's going to be updates about whatever's going on in my life there. And patreon.com/selfworst. We are making bonus content. We're actually doing it. I'm doing it this time. There's a couple of tutorials up there now about installing some wall anchors, building a rudimentary shelf for your apartment, doing a little handyman stuff. There's going to be more stuff to come. I might do some kettlebell tutorials or some basic boxing tutorials. Again, not really qualified as a personal trainer, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But it's a dollar a month, so that's the quality education you are paying for. All right, I'm going to go now, and I don't know. Maybe get outside a little bit more now that I can go outside because it's not raining. Maybe just, I don't know. I've been playing Stray a lot, the Vidya game from a couple of years ago. Since I have a PS4, I'm playing all these old games that are old news to everybody. I'm like, you heard of this Spider-Man game? And they're like, yeah, man, that came out in 2018. What? There's already a sequel. I'm like, yeah, but the original pretty good. Anyway, I'm playing Stray. You're a little kitty cat in that game. That's fun. Not really a cat person, but I get it. Again, I see the appeal. It might not be for me, but, you know, it's fun to pretend to be a cat on a video game screen. Or in real life, if that's what you're into. If you're into cat play, if you're into cat play, write in selfworst@gmail.com and might have you on the show. So there's your opportunity right there. All right, I'm going to leave now and let you get to the next podcast in your queue, whatever it may be, whatever you got. I'm Brad Pearson. Until next time, go to karaoke and maybe get in a bar fight.